This is the Internet Multicasting Service. Harper Audio presents science fiction author and former journalist Frank Herbert, reading from his epic trilogy of stories about the planet Dune.
To understand the conflict of Dune, you must know about the field process shield, which slows the rapid thrust of any solid object. Know about the feudal society which has grown up in these times, and about the harsh training for the aristocracy. You meet Paul Atreides here at age 15 when he enters a training session with one of his teachers, Gurney Halleck. They are in the family castle on Caladan. Paul lifted the companion rapier, bent it in his hands, stood in the agile, 1 foot forward. He let his manner go solemn in a comic imitation of Dr. Yue. "What a dolt my father sends me for weaponry," Paul intoned. "This doltish Gurney Halleck has forgotten the first lesson for a fighting man, armed and shielded." Paul snapped the force button at his waist, felt the crinkled skin tingling of the defensive field at his forehead and down his back, heard external sounds take on the characteristic shield-filtered flatness. "In shield fighting, one moves fast on defense, slow on attack," Paul said. "Attack has the sole purpose of tricking the opponent into a misstep, setting him up for the attack sinister. The shield turns the fast blow, admits the slow kinjal." Paul snapped up the rapier, feinted fast, and whipped it back for a slow thrust, timed to enter a shield's mindless defenses. Halleck watched the action, turned at the last minute to let the blunted blade pass his chest. "Speed excellent," he said, "but you were wide open for an underhanded counter with a slip tip." Paul stepped back, chagrined. "I should whap your backside for such carelessness," Halleck said. He lifted a naked kinjal from the table and held it up. "This, in the hand of an enemy, can let out your life's blood. You're an apt pupil, none better. But I've warned you that not even in play do you let a man inside your guard with death in his hand." "I guess I'm not in the mood for it today," Paul said. "Mood?" Halleck's voice betrayed his outrage even through the shield's filtering. "What has mood to do with it? You fight when the necessity arises, no matter the mood. Mood's a thing for cattle, or making love, or playing the balisette. It's not for fighting." "I'm sorry, Gurney." "You're not sorry enough." Halleck activated his own shield, crouched with kinjal outthrust in left hand, the rapier poised high in his right. "Now I say guard yourself for true." He leaped high to one side, then forward, pressing a furious attack. Paul fell back, parrying. He felt the field crackling as shield edges touched and repelled each other, sensed the electric tingling of the contact along his skin. "What's gotten into Gurney?" he asked himself. "He's not faking this." Paul moved his left hand, dropped his bodkin into his palm from its wrist sheath. "You see a need for an extra blade, eh?" Halleck grunted. "Is this betrayal?" Paul wondered. "Surely not Gurney." Around the room they fought, thrust and parry, feint and counterfeint. The air within their shield bubbles grew stale from the demands on it that the slow interchange along barrier edges could not replenish. With each new shield contact, the smell of ozone grew stronger. Paul continued to back, but now he directed his retreat toward the exercise table. "If I can turn him beside the table, I'll show him a trick," Paul thought. "One more step, Gurney." Halleck took the step. Paul directed a parry downward, turned, saw Halleck's rapier catch against the table's edge. Paul flung himself aside, thrust high with rapier, and came in across Halleck's neckline with the bodkin. He stopped the blade an inch from the jugular. "Is this what you seek?" Paul whispered. "Look down, lad," Gurney panted. Paul obeyed, saw Halleck's kinjal thrust under the table's edge, the tip almost touching Paul's groin. "We'd have joined each other in death," Halleck said, "but I'll admit you fought some better when pressed to it. You seem to get the mood," and he grinned wolfishly, the ink vine scar rippling along his jaw. "The way you came at me," Paul said, "would you really have drawn my blood?" Halleck withdrew the kinjal, straightened. "If you'd fought one whit beneath your abilities, I'd have scratched you a good one, a scar you'd remember. I'll not have my favorite pupil fall to the first Harkonnen tramp who happens along." No Harkonnen tramp gets Paul Atreides, but on Dune they do kill all but Paul and his mother, the Lady Jessica. The two of them flee to the desert, where they seek refuge with Liet Kynes, the planetologist. They are talking to Kynes when the door behind Paul slammed open. He whirled to see reeling violence, shouting, the clash of steel, wax image faces grimacing in the passage. With his mother beside him, Paul leaped for the door, seeing Idaho blocking the passage, his blood-pitted eyes there visible through a shield blur, claw hands beyond him, arcs of steel chopping futilely at the shield. There was the orange fire mouth of a stunner repelled by the shield. Idaho's blades were through it all, flick-flicking, red dripping from them. Then Kynes was beside Paul, and they threw their weight against the door. Paul had one last glimpse of Idaho standing against a swarm of Harkonnen uniforms, his jerking, controlled staggers, the black goat hair with a red blossom of death in it. Then the door was closed, and there came a snick as Kynes threw the bolt. "You've a way out of here," Paul said. "Shall we use it?" Kynes took a deep breath, said, "This door should hold for at least 20 minutes against all but a lace gun." "They'll not use a lace gun for fear we've shields on this side," Paul said. "Those were Sardaukar in Harkonnen uniforms," Jessica whispered. They could hear pounding on the door now, rhythmic blows. Kynes indicated the cabinets against the right-hand wall, said, "This way." He crossed to the first cabinet, opened a drawer, manipulated a handle within it. The entire wall of cabinets swung open to expose the black mouth of a tunnel. "This door also is plasteel," Kynes said. "You were well prepared," Jessica said. "We lived under the Harkonnens for 80 years, Kynes said. He herded them into the darkness, closed the door. In the sudden blackness, Jessica saw a luminous arrow on the floor ahead of her. Kynes' voice came from behind them. "We'll separate here. This wall is tougher. It'll stand for at least an hour. Follow the arrows like that one on the floor. They'll be extinguished by your passage. They lead through a maze to another exit where I've secreted the thopter. There's a storm across the desert tonight. Your only hope is to run for that storm, dive into the top of it, ride with it. My people have done this in stealing thopters. If you stay high in the storm, you'll survive." "What of you?" Paul asked. "I'll try to escape another way if I'm captured. Well, I'm still Imperial Planetologist. I can say I was your captive." "Running like cowards," Paul thought. "But how else can I live to avenge my father?" He turned to face the door. Jessica heard him move, said, "Duncan's dead, Paul. You saw the wound. You can do nothing for him." "I'll take full payment for them all one day," Paul said. "Not unless you hurry now," Kynes said. Paul felt the man's hand on his shoulder. "Where will we meet, Kynes?" Paul asked. "I'll send Fremen searching for you. The storm's path is known. Hurry now, and the Great Mother give you speed and luck."
This has been Harper Audio. HarperCollins is the copyright owner of this recording and has consented to a limited distribution of Harper Audio as an 8 kHz computer sound file on Internet Town Hall. It is a violation of United States and international copyright laws to copy these recordings in any other way. Harper Audio is a trademark of HarperCollins Publishers, Inc. To order a copy of this tape or to request a catalog of all Harper Audio spoken word cassettes, please call 1-800-C-HARPER or 717-941-1214 or send mail to harper@town.hall.org. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Support for Harper Audio is provided by HarperCollins and by Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Network connectivity for the Internet Multicasting Service is provided by UUNet Technologies and MFS DataNet.